IABC Ottawa presents The Voice.
The Voice offers expert insights and practical takeaways for people in the marketing communications industry.
We're sharing the latest ideas and issues with sector professionals.
What can we do to help you take your career to the next level?
Hi, I'm Sherilyn Starkey, and this is The Voice. One of the great perks of being a host on The Voice podcast is I get to travel around and meet some great people and have some interesting conversations as part of my interviews. Recently, I was invited to attend the MarCom conference in Ottawa. MarCom and IABC Ottawa have been partners these past several years. As part of that partnership, I got to attend the conference last year for the full 2 days. My job was to be a roving reporter to attend as many conferences and sessions as possible and see what I can learn and record it for you, our audience here at The Voice. What follows now are some one-on-one interviews with conference presenters. And also I tried my best to get some audio of some of the presentations as they were being delivered. The sound quality isn't 100%, but it's not bad, actually. So there's a lot that you will learn by listening through. Sessions that I attended were, you know, just so full of actionable content, all kinds of information, all kinds of education on offer in a variety of different formats and timelines. There was a lot about the influence of internet technology and how to integrate that digital channels across all tactics. There was a lot of information on analytics and measurement and ROI, which is really, really important for marketers and communicators. The full cycle of marketing was covered. You know, there was discussion about strategy, about tactics, about implementation, measurement, how to really deliver results. I found it to be very beneficial from both a professional development perspective and also from a networking perspective. I met a lot of really nice people. I made some new business contacts, had a really nice time. It happens every year in June in Ottawa. MarCom is for marketers and communications professionals who work in the not-for-profit or public sectors. People from all over Canada come to it. I really do highly recommend coming out to MarCom next year. Put it in your calendar now. Now, while MarCom was a 2-day conference event, the first day was devoted to full-day workshops, and there was several of them on offer. I was lucky enough to attend one called Connecting with the Changing Canadian Population. I found it fascinating. So this was run by a whole project team from Environix Analytics. There were demographers and consultants and researchers all took part in delivering this full day at workshop. There was so much to learn, and I could tell by conferring with some of my colleagues on the day that they found it fascinating and very, very useful. The first part of this podcast is devoted to some audio that I grabbed of the various presenters of the day. Basically, what they talked about was the changing demographics and the social values and the behavioral characteristics of the Canadian population. And this was mostly based on the census results from 2016. They also went through the implications of the changes to our population and how audience segmentation, channel selection, and message customization are being impacted by the changing face of the Canadian population. We did a couple of exercises that were really useful in helping us understand the data and learning how to align it accurately with our objectives and learning how to, you know, the impacts that it gets made on communications. It was really, really beneficial. What follows now are some sessions that feature Doug Norris, who is the Senior Vice President and Chief Demographer at Environix, along with some of his colleagues that helped us put all this data into context. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed attending.
Society with what's happening. And I think I don't feel this issue is getting nearly the attention that I think it should. So that's a big trend, and we see the results of that showing up in the occupational mix. We look at many of the professions. I've just put up 4 here. Look at young millennial women now make up 50 to 60% of lawyers, physicians, dentists, and many of the other occupations. Not so much in the engineering area yet, although progress is being made, but outside of that.
Compare that to their mother's generation, where 20 to 30% were women. So a real change in the occupational mix, and we'll see this gradually just moving up over time, and in another decade or so, women will be a majority overall in all of these professions. Incomes have sort of slowly risen, ups and downs over the benchmark back to 2000, about a 15%. You can see the pause during the recession, but not a whole big decline. If you superimpose the U.S. on this, the U.S. actually hasn't caught up in 2015 with where they were in 2000 in real terms after you adjust for inflation. Men and women, you can see the effect of that higher education. Women's income coming off a much lower base, still a big gender gap in income, but the gap is slowly closing. 25% increase for women and hardly any increase for men. Again, that situation of support and gender differences. We look at it by age. Women of all ages sort of increasing at a healthy amount. Males, particularly young males, actually haven't gone back to where their predecessors were in 2000 in real terms. Again, low income. So that young millennial male. Overall household income, again, lots of diversity across the country. Alberta far and away out in front, may have pulled back a little bit in the last couple of years, but still significantly higher than Ontario. And you see the other western provinces also high. Same sort of relationship, more or less, as overall population growth. So just end up a couple of words on generations. What do we mean by generations? Well, lots of debate about how you cut generations, but I think way, way overblown in terms of the way it's talked about. The reason is that any one of these groups, boomers in particular, but even more so millennials, are so heterogeneous within the group that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to talk about millennials as a group. They're different demographically as well as in many other ways. But there's lots of buzz about it, and that's how they line up. And the millennials are important from a numbers point of view. You can see they're going to increase in size. That young adult population, now in their 20s and 30s, going to increase in size over time because of immigration. Immigrants come in their 20s and 30s. And the boomers start to die off. Mortality's starting to hit. So going forward, that young millennial generation, a big group for any practical purposes. And there are differences across time in terms of the generations, more changes gradually. Basically, the big change is that there's been a delay in terms of perhaps what I call entering adulthood among young people. They've married later, started having children later, stayed in school longer, stayed at home with parents longer, and that's been happening since the millennials. This is just the proportion married. You can see back for the boomers, 75% were married by the late 20s. Today, under half are married or common law together. So you've got that delay, and that's an important factor from many points of view.
So we don't actually do any, Environics Analytics doesn't actually do any surveys. I mean, Environics Research does. There are other surveys out there that in the marketplace that we use. So we're actually taking data from wherever it comes from. Vehicle registration data. So that's not actually a survey. That's real data, right? We get data from the Canada Revenue Agency every year at a census tract level that gives us all kinds of financial attributes. Tony won't let me saying this, but there's a great survey that one of his competitors does at Ipsos on the Canadian Financial Monitor that looks at financial holdings. We use that data. The Print Measurement Bureau, or Vividata as it's known now, they are a media measurement agency or nonprofit organization, industry organization, that has hundreds and hundreds of attributes on people's lifestyles, the media they use, the magazines they read, their leisure activities, where they shop. So we take that data. So what we do is we kind of bring all this data together and through a statistical process, express it as estimates for every postal code based on the characteristics of the postal code. Okay, so that's why we're able to give you, you know, a view of all this sort of external data of, around the population. So that can plug into what you may be doing within your own transactional data, or whatever other surveys that you may have done, your own surveys that you may have done, that help you think about what your target population is. But then, if you within a survey, you can only ask so many questions. So how do you learn more about them? And this is not the only way. I mean, what we do is not the only way to learn more about them. There are other ways to plug data into what you're doing. But I think it's an important point, because in our experience in the marketing and comms world, and this is not meant to sound as a criticism, but it's often in the comms world in particular, there can be a little bit of old data. My experience personally is that the comms folks are more excited about the messaging and the creative and the strategy, right? That's what motivates you. So the data side sometimes can be a bit intimidating, but there's a lot of value in going through those steps in putting the data together, because then you can get these. I mean, you're seeing a bunch of segment profiles that are pretty well developed and rich. You're able to create something quite valuable that really helps you know who you're trying to reach and be more focused and do all that fun strategy stuff that I think you folks all love to do. Right. Yes?
So if we're trying to soften opposition, we're going to craft this kind of message. If we're going to try and move people from opposition to neutral, these are the kinds of messages that we think work. We're trying to create support. These are the kinds of messages that we think will work. So then what we would do is we would do some focus groups, and ideally we will segment them by these audiences, because that's how you're going to know whether or not the specific messages that you're targeting are resonating. We do this a lot in healthcare work. Generally, we'll segment groups either by income, we'll segment them by gender, age. I'll use the vaccination example. We'll tend to do some others if that's who your target audience is. Ideally, you would want to test your messages with your target audience. I know it's very difficult when you're doing general pop Canadian messaging. We tend to want to communicate to all Canadians, but even within all Canadians, there are different touch points and different levers that can be pulled to different groups. And so that's really what this is about, is crafting messages for different audiences and testing them with the relevant audiences. Not to say that they're not going to work with other groups, but you really want to make sure that your target audience is interpreting your messages correctly. So that's what we would do for message testing. And then what you get out of it is you typically use a stoplight system from Qualitative. Very easy to interpret, just very intuitive. We find out which messages are the most that resonate the most, the ones that are not starters. But more than that, we get to understand how they're interpreting your message. So you may be writing messages about electronic vehicles, and you may have an understanding or a way in your head that you're thinking about it and talking about it. It may be completely different than the way that they're interpreted. I'll use affordable housing as an example. I was doing groups last year on message testing, and we were using the term affordable housing. And we came out of it with, wow, it's actually, people think about bricks and mortar, they think about building bricks and mortar houses, and other people think about it as policy. So one of the key learnings out of that was, we're not on the same page when we're talking about language. So that's what this is about, is really not only trying to figure out which messages work and which ones don't, but are they interpreting the message that you're putting out as intended? Because that is really important when you're doing your communications. And when we're so close to it, we may have a sense on how they're going to interpret it, and quite often we'll come out of it and there'll be one aha moment and we'll be like, oh my gosh, that is not what I wanted to say. So what we do here is buzzwords, there are some general common things that I've learned when I've done communications testing, validating, putting statistics out there, backing up statements, they tend to be more successful. Grounding it in data also could be a little bit more successful. Platitudes, kind of broad paintbrush statements, well, this is for the betterment of society, or we can lead the way, or things along those lines, those tend to have less success. Depending on what your message is, it might work, but you're not going to really know until you hear from others how they feel about your messages. But there are some standards that are, some recurring themes, I would say, that I've seen over the number of years of message testing.
So I am backstage with Rupen Sioni from Environix. I've just spent a whole day in a workshop here with Rupen and his team. Rupen, why do you come to MarCom every year?
We've come to MarCom for many years, and it's a passion of mine. I'm an urban planner by training, so applying data and analytics to public sector applications is always something that's near and dear to my heart. So I feel like this is a way that we can support all the good work that that people do in the public and nonprofit sectors. Obviously, it's also good business for us because we really do believe that our skills, our data, have a place in making marketing and communications more effective and more efficient in the public sector, and that's always an issue with limited funds and resources.
Okay, great. Have a great conference.
Thank you.
Kicking off the second day and the main day of MarCom was Ron Tite, who did the morning keynote address. He is the CEO of the Tite Group. I think they're located in Toronto. He gave a really amusing and powerful keynote, which really kind of set the tone for the day. He was talking about how we are all of us communicators and marketers are locked in battle to get the time and attention of our audiences. There's just so many stories out there competing for the attention of our target audiences. The main thrust of his presentation was the fact that public sector and third sector organizations aren't competing for people's donations. Like, yes, they are competing for the public's donations and their budgets and their social change, to make people behave differently. But mostly we're competing for time and attention. It was a really amusing and energetic keynote, and hopefully you enjoy the live audio that I captured.
So when we talk about what we as professionals need to do in marketing, we can talk about the 30,000 strategic, but the 30,000 view from looking at a strategy. But until we bring it into the trenches, until us as individuals, as human beings, as people, make different decisions today than we made yesterday, it doesn't go anywhere. It's a big waste of time. So everything you're going to hear today should really come back to, but how does that change what I do on a daily basis? When I started my own agency, I was executive creative director at a large multinational agency, and I left. I was at a shoot in Montevideo, Uruguay, and it was the fourth time I was shooting in South America that month. I looked back, and I saw this crew of 40 people. And it was a spot for a large multinational CPG. And I turned to my producer and said, how are we still doing this? How are we still flying halfway around the world to shoot 15, 30 seconds? This is crazy. And I went back and I quit. And what I did for the next 6 months was I went through the entire ecosystem, what I thought, of starting with national broadcasters and national publishers, and moving into media sales and then into media buyers, media planners, and then into creative agencies and digital agencies and social agencies, not-for-profit marketing agencies, and then all the way through to end clients. And interviewed everybody about what was wrong with marketing from their perspective. And there were two constants through it. One is that content was going to rule the day, which is why I started a content agency. The second thing was pretty much every person said, this whole place is messed up. I mean, not my job. I know what's going on. It's everybody else in here. So if we're going to make changes, we as people have to make changes. Now, not all artists have to do that. If you didn't know Steve Martin, you'll know who this is. This is Psy, who wrote and performed Gangnam Style, which is the most watched video of all time. Now, I had a great opportunity. I was in Vancouver at the Art of Marketing and got an opportunity on stage to interview a guy named Scooter Braun. And Scooter Braun is the guy that discovered Justin Bieber. He's Justin Bieber's manager. He's also Psy's manager. So after we talked about the Beans a lot, I said, all right, now this guy, what's he gonna do to top this. I mean, is this 15 minutes over or what? And I then felt like a jerk because his response, he came back and he said, why does he have to do anything? This guy took a song in Korean, made it the most watched video of all time. Why can't he just go, I'm out, right? And everybody else has a chance to consume that content. So that's what we're up against. So, you know, the first part of this is that your customers are way more creative than you are. Because if you're dealing with them when they're wearing their consumer hat, and I know this isn't obviously a private sector conference, but we are all consumers at the end of the day. And so when we're dealing with people when they're in that realm, they can be way more creative than we are because they don't have to go to legal. They don't have to sell it up the food chain. They don't have to get everybody on side. They can just do it. So what, and this can be really frustrating for people in your space because you go, well, this message is really important. And you get together a group of people and you're like, we need to do a message, we need to put a sign near the door. It's critically important for people to hear this. And then you get together and you arrange calendars and you cancel a meeting because someone's sick, and then you get back together and you're like, what should the sign say? And then somebody's like, it should say important. You're like, hey, you don't want to scare people. No. Nancy, I don't know that the I should be capitalized on that. I don't know. And then you when the brand police show up and go, God, you're using the wrong font. Come on, do this right. And then you give it to your internal designer, who's like, I put a box around. That's my thing. You know, that's what I do. And then you ship it out for three quotes. Only three quotes.
Yeah.
And you send it to the wood guy, and the plastic guy, and the aluminum guy, and then you go to the aluminum guy, and you're like, hey, man, you do it for the price of the wood guy? He's like, yeah, for you, you're a good customer, yeah, right? And then Jimmy, your handyman, comes in once a week, and you go, hey, Jimmy, we got to hang this on. Jimmy hangs this on. And you put time, and you put resources against it, and it's great production value. And most importantly, it's a critical message. It's an important message. And then within 30 seconds, an intern with a Sharpie and a napkin comes along and steals your focus. Your focus is being stolen. You gotta win it back. You used to own this space. That you are the organizations that do stand for something greater. At the heart of what you do, for most of you, is a soul of something that is more important. You're not selling crackers. You're not selling Diet Coke. You're selling something that's more important. So the issue, though, with a lot of social profit or public sector organizations is that because it's there in your DNA, you forget about it. And you get on with your day. So we have to stand for something greater. And here's the issue for you. Because you used to own that, know that when I go in and talk to private sector organizations, I was just at Pfizer yesterday. You know what I tell them? I tell them the exact same thing. But they have to stand for something greater. And so the issue, the result of all this, is that the private sector right now is eating your lunch. Because they also are trying to win the battle for time, and they know that lease payments and that calories and nutritional information and $2.99 off ain't gonna do it. So they're starting to elevate the conversation to something that's more important, to something that people care about. Let me summarize the entire research for you. Everything is going up. Everything. We're reading more, watching more, listening more. Everything is going up. And I said, well, but what expense? There's only 24 hours in a day. And he said, two things behind this. One, the fact that technology is allowing us to consume content in places that we wouldn't have ever consumed it before. So that's why we're consuming more. And two, less face-to-face interaction.
Okay, I'm here with Ron Tite at Marcom this year, and he was the opening keynote speaker. Ron, you were explaining in your presentation a little bit about budgeting and how to devote attention and budget towards key issues. You were talking about 80-10-10, and a lot of our conference goers are really struggling with tight budgets, and it's, they're getting even tighter as days go by. So could you kind of reflect a bit on your 8-10-10 budget breakdown?
Yeah, so 80% of the budget should be spent in our core. These are the things that over time we've known have worked, and they give us an expected engagement level or attendance numbers or whatever performance metrics we want to measure. So we have to invest in the core to make the core as efficient as possible. How do we deliver that core as cheaply, financially, and as efficiently from a time perspective? Once we've got that, over time, the core is going to decrease. So somebody that had, you know, direct mail in their core 10 years ago, that just probably shouldn't be in the core today. So how do you replace that? Well, far too many people are trying to flip the switch and completely take all of their spend from one area into the next. And that's not responsible at all, because the world doesn't work that way. You know, there's still a huge number of people in the world that still use Yellow Pages, right? There's the Yellow Pages population. So we can't flip the switch. So what we have to do is incrementally bring new things into the core once they're proven. So the way to do that is, if 80% of our budget is in the core, 10% of our budget should be spent on making the core smarter and cheaper and faster. The other 10% should be used to develop things that hopefully one day will go into the core. They're not there yet. We don't know how they're going to work. We're just going to try them out with a small amount of budget. And then once we see an expected level of performance where it's good enough to move into the core, then we can do that. And often what that means is that it replaces something that's already in the core. It's delivering, it's performing better than something in the core. So that's when you lose the old stuff. So one by one, you just start losing the things, you start replacing the old tactics with the new tactics, opposed to flipping the switch.
Great, thank you very much. Dale Harley and Ken McIntyre teamed up to give a presentation about relationships and the role of relationships in building solid marketing and communications plans. They presented a case study based on the National Capital Heavy Construction Association and how they transformed that organization from what they characterized as a sleepy social club into what is now a highly regarded and effective powerhouse that hits well above its weight. So I'm here with Dale Harley after his excellent presentation about the importance of relationships and relationship-centered businesses and organizations. So Dale, can you tell me, what do you think about the role of relationships vis-a-vis the sexiness and fun of technology and the role that it plays in communications and in marketing and PR? Where do you feel that relationships fit into all this?
Actually, I strongly believe that relationships are even more important today than they were in the past. And a lot of that has to be with the broad use of social media, that a person thinks or an organization thinks that they're really talking to everyone when they tweet something or when they post something on Facebook. It's the opposite of the old adage of the medium is the message. Well, in this case, it's really, quite frankly, it's the opposite. You can't think that you're going to be able to communicate just because you're on social media.
Thanks so much for your time.
No problem.
My final session of the day was with another double act. We had Jeremy Harley, who's in communications at the Treasury Board of Canada Secretariat, and Alex Jaspers, who is a senior communications advisor at Public Services and Procurement Canada. This is probably one of my favorite sessions of the day, where guys got into a really great discussion about how to implement digital tools into the mix. The reason it was so interesting was because these guys live the world that they're talking about. They really talked about how to implement these kinds of digital changes to communications within the context and the reality of the public sector. So they covered off, you know, access to tools, and they discussed, you know, how to secure approvals for communications. There was a discussion about how sometimes there's some real challenges around that in public sector organizations. I really, really enjoyed their talk, and I hope you do too. What's the main message that you wanted people to take away out of the room, and I'll make that the question?
I mean, I think if you ask either of us, it would be probably a different answer. I find that whenever I talk tools, for me, and I hope that, I think, it both of us as well, but it's really, you know, content isn't king, it's context is king.
I also attended a roundtable discussion. It was entitled Keys to Success in Marketing programs designed to change attitudes and behaviors. I spent a fair bit of my day job working on stuff like that, so I thought this would be an interesting session. I'm going to apologize because I didn't get any audio from it. It was just not going to work logistically in that setup. There was just so much ambient noise. I just knew that it wasn't going to be much point in doing it. But I did want to record here for you guys that it was an excellent session. It was tabled by Jim Mintz, who's the managing partner at the Center of Excellence for Public Sector Marketing. The second speaker was Jay Kazarer, who's president of Coleridge and a general manager of Tools for Change. And so they discuss the common mistakes that organizations make when they're trying to implement a marketing strategy to change the way that people think and act. So it's a little bit different than marketing. It's not about donations, or it's not about selling things. It's really about making people change the way they think. So quite a unique perspective on it. And it was an interesting discussion. It's very popular. There was way too many people around the table for me to be able to gather any voices sensibly. But I did want to say that they told us about the Social Marketing Association of North America, known as the SMANA. I would suggest that if you're interested in this kind of marketing communication, to check out that association. They seem to have a lot of assets, a lot of content, and a lot of advice that you can get online.
The Voice podcast is published by IABC Ottawa for marketers, communicators, and creative advertisers everywhere. We'd like to thank Amanda Speroni from Thornley Follis Communications, our sponsor. Amanda is our producer. I am Sherry Lynn Starkey, your host. I'm the past president of IABC Ottawa, and I'm the current president of Thornley Follis Communications with offices in Ottawa and Toronto. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Sherry Lynn Starkey, or at Twitter, at Sherry Lynn, or reach out to IABC at IABC Ottawa on Twitter. Thank you for listening, and please watch for future episodes of The Voice from IABC Ottawa.